The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of The Whisper in Darkness. I'm your host, The Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. On this episode, we are continuing with our review of the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. This time we're taking a look at the neutral cards. We'll review In the Thick of It, Heavy Furs, Sled Dog, Rod of Animalism, and Call for Backup. There are spoilers throughout if you care about that sort of thing. If you enjoy what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Just a quick reminder of how we rate cards here on The Whisper in Darkness. The best of the best get an Elder Sign, while the worst of the worst get an Autofail, and the cards in between get a +1/+0 or Elder Thing respectively. Cards that you build around or are good in one particular investigator get a Blessed Token, while cards that we believe are destined to end up on the optional list of taboos or that are just bad for the game get a Curse Token. Before we get started, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these reviews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Special thanks to Cole Monroe Chitty for the tremendous art that graces the channel, Nicole Fiscus for the new Whisper in Darkness logo, and Nate Lost in Time and Space for the intro as well as the overlays. Thank you very much. I couldn't do it without you. Without further ado, let's get started. We are back with our review of the player cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. Remember that if you enjoy this type of content, to like, comment, and subscribe. We would appreciate it. We are looking at the neutral cards in this video. We're going to start things off with In the Thick of It. It is a permanent asset, limit one per deck. You purchase it at deck creation. When you purchase In the Thick of It, suffer 2 total physical and or mental trauma, then earn 3 experience. I think, Nate, you referred to this as opening Pandora's box for deck builders. Seems pretty good. The big question I have is whether this is this an auto-include now?
I think after talking a bit about this segment off camera, I think I've come to the conclusion that some groups are going to accept that this is an auto include. And I think some play groups are going to be taking that trade all day long. And then there may be some player groups that are more adverse to trauma, so they're not going to be willing to take that 2 trauma for the 3 experience. That being said, me personally, this is an auto-include in pretty much every deck. I think it's kind of a shame that they didn't at least put 2 in the box so that at least 2 players could use them.
Yeah.
That's a minor gripe, but I think aside from that, this card solves an issue that I think a lot of solo players experience, where if you fall behind an experience at the beginning of a campaign, that can really snowball out of your control, and now you're earning not nearly as much experience in scenarios 3 and 4, and then that leads you to suffer further consequences further into the campaign. And this card essentially solves that issue. You know, it allows you to grab level 1 cards right off the bat, things like lockpicks and magnifying glass, or, you know, there's 100 examples, I'm sure. But, you know, if now all of a sudden as a rogue you have your lockpicks, you can investigate locations you otherwise had no business investigating. You're getting those victory points off those high shroud locations, and now you're getting even more experience, which may prevent you from getting trauma further down the road. So, you know, this can pay for itself in 2 ways, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, there are quite a few cards that you want to start off with but can't because they cost 1 or 2 XP.
I think
Lockpicks is kind of one of them, unless you have the Winifred Havmix starter deck, but if you don't, then yeah, lockpicks is one of them. I see what you're saying, Nate. Yeah.
I think another big example is Charisma or Relic Hunter, because now you can start with those assets in your deck from scenario 1. So now all of a sudden, say you're playing Min, you can play Peter Sylvester and Dr. Milan Christopher. Now all of a sudden, you know, you're doing things that you had no business doing scenario 1. There's just so many cards that this, I think, potentially leads into, like, so many unseen combos and unforeseen consequences of card design, that this card just feels like it's going to break something, if that makes sense, especially in combination with something like Versatile. Versatile plus this card is Pandora's Box of Arkham. Because now all of a sudden, any investigator can take any card from any card pool.
At level zero.
At level zero for the cost of two trauma.
Yeah, I guess that's the real question, is like, how meaningful is two trauma? And that's really hard to do, because if you think about it, damage doesn't really mean much until it actually takes you out. So, and all what really in the thick of it does is it gives you some damage every game. So if you never feel the consequences of that damage, then there's no cost in the thick of it. I know I'm getting a little existential here and philosophical, but I guess what I'm saying is that the two trauma can be very hard to quantify. Is this a meaningful downside, or is it just a psychological downside, which I think we've talked about before, that trauma is as much psychological as it is actually like in game. Trauma tends to be associated with failing a scenario, either by being defeated by damage or horror. So players will often go out of their way to really avoid trauma because it's associated with failure. But in the thick of it, you're getting trauma, you didn't fail anything, and you get a nice upside. So the question becomes is like, what is the actual value of that trauma if you remove the psychological element away from it? There was no failure. What does the trauma actually mean? You know, and then it's like, oh, it does open up some issues. Yeah. I kind of wished it like it wasn't so straightforward in what it gave you. I wish there was like a downside to your deck building.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of downside you'd include on a card like this, but
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think Matt, you make a good point, and we have had some experience with this type of effect with Arcane Research, which came out in Threads of Fate, which gave Mystics an opportunity to take one or two trauma in order to improve their XP curve as a campaign continued. And I think 90% of the, or 99% of the time, Mystics are willing to make that trade all day long, because most of them have sanity to spare, and so taking two trauma was almost irrelevant, I think. And so I feel like this one follows in the same vein, where I think once people sort of wrap their heads around how much life, you know, health and sanity they have, taking two trauma will be a no-brainer for most players, and they'd be more than happy to trade either health and or sanity, depending on which one they have more of. Or if you're a balanced investigator, I think you mentioned Winifred, I think she's got 7 health and 7 sanity. Take one and one, all of a sudden you're gaining that 3 experience points, and then you can afford to purchase whatever you think is going to help your deck. I mean, I think one of the things with this card is it really depends on what you're spending that experience points on. But, you know, Nate and I were looking over the list of even just the level 1 cards that are available. There's 120 plus level 1 cards at this point, and there are some very good choices in every class. You know, if you're a guardian and you want extra ammunition, there's that. There's the tarot cards that are all 1 XP. You can pick up lockpicks if you're a rogue. If you want to build the new dog deck that we looked at, or that we're going to look at in a moment, there's Rod of Animalism that you can pick up for 1 XP. Seekers have access to like hiking boots. Survivors have access to Unrelenting. So, and that's just the 1 XP cards. We haven't even discussed, you know, 2 XP and 3 XP if you want to go that route. Nate, you mentioned how this, you know, in combination with Versatile, basically any card in the game can now be included in your deck for 2 XP and, you know, a slightly larger deck size. And this allows you to basically take any of the new permanent assets that are in this box. So if you want to start with Geared Up, or what's the
say it
what's the Seeker one,
or say it, there you go,
you can also take Down the Rabbit Hole.
Ooh, so, don't yeah. do that. No.
Don't do that. You know, it also combos with things like Charon's Obel. You can take Charon's Obel and get two scenarios extra worth of experience out of Charon's Obel. Yeah, there's just tons of cards that this interacts with.
Like Jessica Hyde is available to survivors. Survivors can go for the whole cat deck if they want to. Like you said, it opens Pandora's box, and While I like that this card exists, I just wonder, I have a problem with cards when they become auto includes and you're just doing it without any thought whatsoever. And I feel like this one sort of crosses that line where there's really no reason not to take it, because the trauma most of the time is not going to impact you. Like you said, Matastrophic, it's, you know, trauma only matters until it, you know, damage and horror only matter unless they're going to kill you. Otherwise, it's largely irrelevant. And I think that's one of the things you really notice as your game, as you play this game, is this is like, oh, I can take, you know, all these attacks of opportunity because I've got health and sanity to spare and I don't need to worry about it.
I think if you're really worried about the trauma, you take Charisma, and now Charisma gives you an extra slot for soak.
Yeah, or like Jessica Hyde, or, you know, anything like, that covers you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, for me, that interaction alone really sours my taste to this card. But I don't know if that's more of Charisma's fault or if it's this card's fault.
Oh, that's a whole...
But that's a, yeah, exactly. This is like we're opening like Pandora's box, and there's like another Russian doll Pandora's box inside of that one. And
yeah, I was going to say Inception, but you've got it. Yeah, we need to go deeper, Nate.
Oh, God. So, yeah, this card's really hard to rate. Like, I think for me personally, it sits somewhere between Elder Sign and Curse Token. Like you were saying, Man from Lang, this card just feels like an auto-include a lot of the time, and I don't like that. I remember, I think it was last week, I was building a Carolyn deck, and Carolyn actually likes to take mental trauma at the beginning of the game because she can heal it off and get additional resources. So it was just all upside for me. I was just like, well, what if I could build my deck in such a way where I could just do that all the time? And then that, it just leads right to solving your deck, essentially, which, you know, we spoke about that with Down the Rabbit Hole that we didn't really like. So
anytime you can turn, without a whole lot of effort, a downside into an upside, you've kind of broke a card. So like the idea of like Carolyn Fern, if you turn that two trauma into two resources just pretty easily, there you go. You've broken the card. Good job. You solved the puzzle. I'd say within the thick of it, I think I've come to understand it as, I think it's a good choice in true solo play, because you kind of need the help in true solo, especially early, because like you said, Nate, you get through scenario one, you start down a path. Is it a path of success where you get all the XP, or is it a path of failure where you just fail your way and don't get a lot of XP and you may not even finish the campaign? I think solo, you kind of need that extra boost. Also, as solo, you have to deal with the consequences of that trauma. You don't have any buddies to like help bail you out of you know, being down at two health or something like that. So you've got to deal with your, you know, the downside of the thick of it. I'd say in multiplayer, it's Curse Token, because it's just too easy to get around in multiplayer, and it creates that, you get that snowball. If all four players have 3 XP right out of the gate, then that means they get all the victory points, and then they get all the victory points next time, and all the victory points next time, and then you've just kind of broken the challenge of the game, you know, that the XP curve. So yeah, I'd say it's a good choice in solo because you kind of need the help, but in multiplayer, Curse, don't take it.
Yeah, this card does solve a problem that I noticed pretty early on playing solo, and you've hit the nail on the head, where it's like if you start to fail, things escalate pretty quickly, and failing one scenario leads you to failing another. I just wish they kind of solved that problem in scenarios, not necessarily with a card that just is like, hey, here's 3 XP, have fun. Yeah. I wish there was some sort of mechanic they could have included in the scenarios that balanced it out a little bit, because I think the biggest reason you don't earn VPs in solo is that a lot of the VPs are on locations, and because you don't have the luxury of time to be like for me, a scenario like Phantom of Truth is a perfect example of this, where there's a lot of VPs on the table, but as a solo player, you do not have the luxury of time of going to the cemetery or going up to the opera house or, you know, doing any of that, because you're just focused on getting through the scenario and dealing with the enemies. And Where in multiplayer, it's just like, yeah, sure, one investigator is just going to go mop up all the VPs while the others are going to deal with the enemies, no problem. And I wish they had solved that issue somehow in the game rather than just dumping VPs on your lap at the beginning. Yeah,
I think another point to touch on too with solo play is that certain enemies in the encounter deck also have victory points. So you're drawing less encounter cards, so you're going to not see those enemies as often as well. So like solo players get the worst of both ends in that regard with victory points. Yeah.
On top of that, solo players, when a solo player, you mentioned a Phantom of Truth. It's actually, Carcosa is a really good example of this. Not only is there are there enemies in the encounter deck that have victory points, but they often have high fight scores. So in a solo play, you're gonna have a really hard time investigating multiple clues off of a 5 shroud location that's out of the way and fighting the 4 fight enemy, you know, because you're solo. But in multiplayer, you have two, if you have 2 or 3 specialists, you're not only digging through the encounter deck 3 times as fast, but you have a designated VP enemy killer and a designated VP location investigator. So solo has it rough because they have a hard time covering all the kinds of victory points out there that you can get. That being said, I do think the campaigns are getting better at this. I think there are fewer enemies in the encounter deck that award VPs, and I think a lot more victory points are showing up on locations that you'll visit anyway. Mm-hmm. It's something I've noted. I think they're getting better at this. Yeah. That being said, you know, the published material isn't going away and it's not being fixed. So, you know, use In the Thick of It responsibly.
Yeah. I don't know how they would have fixed it to do that, but maybe, you know, say there was a permanent or something like that you could designate a location or an enemy at the start and made that location or enemy worth a couple of extra VPs or something like that. So it would be reward you for actually playing the game rather than just saying, here, have these extra XP at the beginning. We're going to put a cost on it being trauma, but you know, we've seen that is largely irrelevant for a lot of decks. I think this one gets a curse token from me just because it's an auto include, and I don't really like that, you know, every deck I think about now, it's just like, well, I could just include Into the Thick of It. And I've come back to Winifred a lot during these reviews, but she just happens to be the investigator I've been playing a lot recently. And this card solves a lot of the problems she has in solo. It's just like, oh, I can't pass willpower tests. Okay, I buy this. I pick up this. I get counter espionage or Moxie or Savant or any of the ways that she can now deal with willpower treacheries. And I'm pretty good at right out of the gate rather than having to wait.
Well, it sounds like you know, what you're using In the Thick of It for is the solution. And that's either catch-up mechanics or handicaps based on number of players at the table. But I don't think Fantasy Flight likes opening up the hood like that and letting you and telling you scenario 5 of this campaign expects you to have at least 20 XP going in. Like, that's not their style. So we end up with fixes like In the Thick of It instead of things like, if you're a solo player, start the campaign with 5 XP. You know, that would be the way to fix it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they already had to give that to Father Mateo just to make him playable to begin with.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew I was opening the door. Sorry, Reese. You know, by saying that. Yep.
I mean, one of the nice things about this card is it does open up those some of those 1 XP spells. And I mean, I was critical of how they interacted with Down the Rabbit Hole, and this allows you to get around that to a certain extent. So that is another thing about this card. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of wish this card didn't exist, because then I wouldn't want to take it every time.
I wish the idea was there, but it was different.
So how are we rating this? Curse all around?
Yeah, I think I'm going to settle on that. I think, I mean, another reason...
It's either an Elder Sign or a curse. And to me, it feels like it's a little too good. I'd have to go back and look at how I rated Arcane Research, which was, you know...
many moons ago.
Yeah, it does something very similar. In the Thick of It, if you are building a deck, you should probably be looking at this card and looking at all the goodies that you can include in your deck. before you even start a campaign. That brings us to Heavy Furs. It is a 2-cost asset that has the item and armor traits as a response after you reveal a non-auto-fail symbol on a chaos token during a skill test you are performing. Deal 1 damage to Heavy Furs. Cancel that chaos token and return it to the bag. Reveal a new chaos token. It has 2 health and takes up the body slot. I had a chance to play this card in my William Yorick deck, and it is nice to have that option to cancel a chaos token. That is not something that is readily available outside of either high XP cards or you're playing a Mystic. The ability to do it twice per game at least, and then you can, of course, if you're playing York, it's easy enough to get this into your discard pile and then recycle it so you can do it all over again. What do you guys think?
I believe you can also combo this with Lonnie, and Lonnie can heal it. It's a pretty cool card. I think the first thing that came to mind for me was the Frost tokens in Edge of the Earth. You know, this feels like a great way to mitigate the effects of the Frost tokens. You know, you can just scoop the first one back into the bag and not have to worry about that second one popping up and give you that auto fail, which is nice. I think aside from that, in other campaigns, you know, Carcosa constantly is feeding you different tokens into the bag. TFA kind of does a similar thing, whether it's cultist tokens or tablet tokens. Trying to remember, Dream Eaters adds skulls, right? In the first scenario?
Yeah.
Yeah, you add like a number of skulls. You know, so like all the campaigns have plenty of symbols that are pretty nasty. Have some pretty nasty effects on them, and being able to dodge those effects once or twice a game can be pretty nice.
Yeah, plus, this card isn't a bit bad. Just the fact that it's neutral, 0 XP, and gives you some health soak, like, that's pretty good. It makes a good, like, especially if your card pool is really thin, it makes a good card 29, card 30, just kind of, like, finish out your deck concept, because it's just universally not bad. Also, as the scenario goes on, some of those symbols can get saves.
Yeah.
So this thing can, like, save your butt. Yeah.
It's also in a slot that most investigators don't really care about. Like, they're not doing anything with it anyway. So it's just kind of feels like a pretty easy include a lot of the time. Yeah.
All you have in that slot at level 0 is what? Trench coat.
Bandolier.
Leather jacket. Leather coat. Yeah. Vine clothes. The classic.
And Robe of Endless Nights from Mystic.
Oh, that's right. And then you have this. Yeah, it's well costed. I think it's got a good effect. And even if you don't use the effect, I just like that it's in the game to kind of fill your deck out and be card number 29 and 30, especially if you don't have a big card pool.
How would we rate this one?
I think for me, I'm going to give it a 0. I think it's fine. You know, like you were saying, Matt, if you're just working with like maybe Edge of the Earth and the core set, this is a pretty fine card to include, and especially like tankier investigators, like Guardians kind of come to mind for me. Not only do they take lots of attacks, but they're going to be fighting enemies with Retaliate. So like being able to like get those tokens that are really nasty late game and being able to replace them can be pretty nice as well. So I like it. It's decent. But I think as you grow your collection, there are going to be other options that are more appealing.
Yeah, that's about the definition of a 0, I'd say. Something that, you know, it's like filler, but you're not ashamed to include it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's not bad. I'd say it's a 0.
Yeah, I'd almost be willing to go up to a +1 on this one, just because I think that effect is just so... It's just not readily available, certainly not in neutral to everybody. The ability to cancel a symbol token is pretty sweet. I think the reason I'm going to settle on 0, though, is because Fine Clothes exists, and I really like Fine Clothes. And Fine Clothes, I think, has a bigger impact on a lot of scenarios. You know, when it was first released back in Where Doom Awaits, at the time, the Path to Carcosa campaign had already been spoiled, and we already knew about The Last King. And since then, it seems like every campaign features the parlay mechanic. And so I'm very reluctant to cut my Fine Clothes for this. Otherwise, I would probably play this in a lot of decks. But Obviously, we're probably never going to receive a card that gives us two body slots. So until that time, as much as I like this card, it's going to be in a constant fight with Fine Clothes for that spot. And then, of course, you start to look at in-class solutions. If you're a Guardian, there's Bandolier. If you're a Mystic, there's Robes of Endless Night. Stuff like that, which also will this thing has to fight for space with. So yeah, I think zero is a pretty good spot for this one.
So are you one of those people who gives Duke his own body slot, his own heavy furs?
That would be nice.
Yeah,
Duke could certainly use it.
Yeah, he needs a doggy jacket. If Duke is gonna go around Antarctica, he's gonna need a jacket.
That's right. Exactly. No, that's a good point.
Maxine
needs to get on that and make us a doggy jacket. Yeah. Speaking of dogs, we have Sled Dog, the 3-cost asset ally creature. You may include up to 4 copies of Sled Dog in your deck. Up to 2 Sled Dog cards take up a single ally slot. As an action, you may exhaust X Sled Dogs to move X times, or you may take an action to exhaust X Sled Dogs to fight. You get plus X combat for this attack. Instead of its standard damage, this attack deals X damage. It has each Sled Dog has 2 health and 2 sanity, and of course we already know you can put 2 Sled Dogs in an ally slot. I find it fascinating that one of the most broken cards from the Call of Cthulhu LCG, the predecessor of the Arkham Horror LCG, has arrived on the scene, and it uses a similar mechanic to the Sled Dog from that game. You could incorporate multiple copies of Sled Dog in your deck in that game as well, and became a little too overpowered, so it ended up on their version of the list of taboos. I have not had a chance to play the dog deck yet. If you can get 4 copies of these things on the table, you can move up to 4 times, or you can do any combination of moving and or fighting with +4 combat and dealing +4 damage, which is nothing to sneeze at. They interplay with 2 health and 2 sanity, which is quite a bit of soak if you have a bunch of these on the table. And, of course, they enter play on the cheap if you are using the Rod of Animalism, which we will look at in a moment, or if you're playing somebody like Leo, who has a natural affinity for allies and can pay less for these things. What is your experience, if any, with the Sled Dog?
I will say that this is definitely designed by Jeremy, without question, right? Because he was national champion of Call of Cthulhu, so I'm sure he had this card in mind when like, tinfoil hat theory, I'm going with it. He designed this card.
I think that's a pretty good theory. He did win the Call of Cthulhu LCG title several times. He has many cards designed around him. And I'm sure this was he played many a Sled Dog back in the day, so no real surprise to see this one make an appearance.
That being said, I don't have any experience with the deck yet. A couple people I've spoken to have played it to pretty good effect. The most common investigator I've seen is Leo, like you were saying, Man from Ling. He has that natural resource discount on playing allies, so he's the most likely candidate, I think. You know, if you're not playing the dog deck, that being said, this is completely useless to you. This is a card you need to ramp up. You need to be able to find them pretty quickly. If you've got 2 of them on the table, it starts to be okay. You know, but you probably realistically want at least 3, like as soon as possible, to get the most amount of value out of it. So I think in tandem, you're probably also going to want to play things like Calling in Favors. Maybe you pick a dog up to find another dog, put the other dog down, stuff like that. You know, I think you're going to be playing a very specific deck when you play the Sled Dogs, but I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it.
So I was initially kind of skeptical on the Sled Dogs when I first saw them because I think you got to have more than 1 on the board for them to do stuff. But then I picked Leo Anderson for Edge of the Earth, and I have been playing Leo Anderson. I'm playing four Sled Dogs, but I am not all in on the dog deck. And what I'm finding is that what the Sled Dogs actually do is when you get two of them out, you get a very good level zero weapon because it gives you plus two to fight and it deals two damage. So compared to things like Machete, Enchanted Blade, Dragon Pole,
mm-hmm.
45 automatic, you know, level zero, it's a very good level zero weapon once you get two. Three, it's an amazing level zero weapon, but then you need Charisma or Rod of Animalism. You need extra slots. You need Mitch in the Leo deck in order to get up to three and to four. But what I'm finding is you can go all in on the dog deck, and it works pretty well. The fact that you have a weapon that doesn't cost a hand slot can actually be really useful if you're a guardian or a rogue when your hands are full. Like I said, just getting two of them, you're going to start feeling some... It's going to be pretty good because, like I said, it's a very good level zero weapon once you hit two dogs. So you don't have to go all in on the dog deck in order to make it work.
Yeah, I was initially thinking that this could be a pretty nice backup weapon for like a flamethrower deck.
Yep. Yep. You know, don't have to spend ammo. Yep.
And you don't have to spend ammo, and it takes up a slot that you otherwise don't really have to use to deal damage with. And,
yep.
You know, you can play Rod of Animalism in that deck. So, you know, you have all the tools at that point.
Yeah. And I guess that's my main point is you don't, the dogs actually do work on their own. Because there are four copies of them, then you're pretty likely to see two over the course of the game. And I think two is when the magic starts happening.
So how would we rate the Sled Dog?
I'm debating between zero and Bless Token. I think Bless Token feels like the most obvious rating because it does feel like a card you build around. You kind of build around getting the most amount of dogs. I think most people that play the dogs are also going to play the Rod. You know, so you're sort of like building an engine inside your deck that's like revolved around playing the Sled Dog. So I don't know if it's something you can easily splash without at least taking into consideration who you're playing as an investigator and like what your ally slot is going to look like otherwise. But yeah, I think Bless Token is the appropriate rating.
Yeah, I think so too, because not only Bless Token, that is, not only do you have to consider what, you know, like how you're going to get the dogs into play, but you got to consider what you're giving up in that ally slot. So one thing to note is that it says up to two dogs, two Sled Dog cards take up a single ally slot. That means once you put a single dog into play, that's your ally slot filled. Like you can't have a single dog and Dr. Milan on the table at once. So, and all the classes have good allies that on their own are going to be stronger than a Sled Dog. So in order to make the Sled Dogs work, I think your plan has to be, it has to be that you're not taking an ally that pound for pound, you know, for compared to a single Sled Dog is very strong. Like you're going to give up attribute bonuses. You're going to give up resources. You're going to give up all sorts of good stuff. So I guess that kind of makes it a plus because just by taking four Sled Dogs, you got to not take other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, I think the fact that you can include up to four copies of the Sled Dog in your deck as well, you're also making some sacrifices there because I found that with the what were the cards released in Dream Eaters, the Myriad cards. Where that was the first time we saw this. You can break the deck building by adding extra cards, but then while that seems great at first, then you realize, oh, I have to cut something. I have to go down to a singleton of one other card in order to fit three copies of Open Gate or Easy Mark or whatnot. And I feel like with the Sled Dogs, you're making a sacrifice as well, because if you're going to play four copies, which you probably want to do if you want to draw the Sled Dogs reasonably quickly so you can get them down, you're giving up two other cards. Whereas with most allies, you're not doing that. So you're giving up something in that. Now, I think I'm going to give this a Blessed Token as well, because I think you're pretty much building around this. I don't think the Sled Dogs are something you're just going to be like, well, I have this, you know, the ally slot is just too competitive to throw it away on whimsy and pick up a couple of Sled Dogs. And so if you're building the dog deck, you're probably buying into the thick of it so you can get the 3 XP. So you can either pick up two copies of the Rod of Animalism, or you're going to go in and pick up Charisma. So now suddenly you can get all four dogs on the table at the beginning of a campaign. and go from there. So yeah, I think you could probably, I'd be curious. I mean, Leo, of course, is the obvious choice because of his discount on allies, but I'd be curious to see how many different variations of the dog deck people come up with. I'm sure somebody has already built an Ashcan Pete dog deck so he can have just all of the dogs and sick sick all of them on an enemy. But I'd be curious to see what other investigators can make good use of them. That they do give, you know, the option, the flexibility of being able to move and or fight with them is pretty nice. And the fact that you could say, if you've got all four dogs on the table, it's like, okay, I need one dog to move or two dogs to move, because moving once isn't going to really do you any good. So two dogs to move and then two dogs to fight and stuff like that gives you some options there. So I'm going to definitely give it a try at some point. There's with 130 plus cards in the set, you can't play everything. So it's nice that the dogs exist.
I will say that if you do give it a try, fortunately, I think the dogs are strong enough that you're not going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, while you were saying that, I think another class that could potentially make use of them is the Seekers.
Yeah.
Seekers have all the card draw in the world. They can find the dogs. And some of the Seekers, like Ursula, get benefits out of moving. Yeah. So maybe she moves a couple of locations and then gets a free investigate, and then she uses the other two dogs to punch through something. Or in Seekers, you kind of have that problem of being able to, like, punch through bigger enemies. And maybe if you have all four sled dogs, you can now all of a sudden you're fighting at, like, a six or something. It could be reasonable, so.
Yeah, I quite like Seeker, that idea, Nate, because one of the issues that you often run into when you're playing Seeker, especially solo, is that so much of their combat is event-based. And unless you have the right event that deals four damage, that being, I've got a plan, you often don't have a follow-up. So you hit something hard and it doesn't die, then as a Seeker, you're usually, unless you've got another event in your hand, you're often SOL, because it's just like, okay, I hit it. Oh, I didn't kill it. Now what do I do? And the dogs gives you that option to say, okay, I hit it with my big event. It had four health. I wasn't able to kill it. Now the dogs follow up and take it out. And it eases some of the pressure on your events, whereas before I'd often find, like, if you don't have enough events, things don't die. And the dogs do give you that option to follow up with a second attack if necessary.
Yeah, the other problem with the Seeker events is that in the case of I've got a plan, you need the clues.
Yeah.
You know, and some scenarios just don't give you enough clues when the enemies show up. You know, like some scenarios in particular are like, you either get the clues or you kill the enemy. I think, like,
spelling out curtain call here.
Yeah, curtain call is a typical one. You know, you're only getting like 6-8 clues, and then you're spending those to advance. So it's like the enemies have to be out at really specific times for you to kill them with I've got a plan. And then occult invocation requires you to discard two other cards.
Yeah, so, and it doesn't deal 4 damage, which is the biggest problem, because it's like, okay, I dealt 3. Well, great.
Crap.
Wow. 3 is quite enough.
Gotta say, though, oh no, guys, not being able to do 4 damage at level 0. Oh man, that's just so hard.
The Seekers always find a way to weasel their way in there.
Seeker word problems.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
It's like, oh, how can Seekers break this card? Oh, many ways.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Let me get a cup of coffee.
Sled Dogs, give them a try. Looks like it's a fun deck. They do provide you with many tools in this box to make it happen. Speaking of one of those tools, we have the Rod of Animalism. It is a 2-cost asset that costs 1 XP. It has a willpower skill icon, the item and relic traits. You have 2 additional ally slots, which can only be used to hold creature assets. So if you are playing this with the sled dogs, basically you can have all four dogs in play at once, and another ally to boot. As a response, when you play a creature asset during your turn, reduce the asset's cost by one, and it takes up an accessory slot. I think this is pretty much the definition of a blessed token. Unless you are building a creature deck, you are probably not playing this card. Gives you the extra ally slots for creature assets and makes them cheaper. I guess the biggest issue with this, and it's probably not an issue because you are building around this, it takes up an accessory slot, which is very competitive. Lots of cards want that slot, and you're giving it up to build the deck, to build the creature deck. And I guess the other issue is that there's just not that many creatures to use this with right now. There's the dogs and some cats, but I was taking a look at if you're playing the cat general and her cats, I don't think you can have multiple cats on the table. I might be wrong about that, but I think if you're playing Miss Doyle, the cats come out one at a time. I could be wrong about that, but
the individual aspects say when they enter play, discard the other two.
Yeah. So really you're limited to the sled dogs at this point, and I don't know how many other creatures we are going to see in the game. So
There is Familiar Spirit if you wanted to like go ham on your arcane slots. Survivors have Stray Cat and Mysterious Raven, I guess. If you wanted, like, free... like, Mysterious Raven is basically, like, take a horror, get a clue for free, which is okay, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really seem like a reason to play Rod of Animalism without sled dogs.
The thing about Rod of Animalism is you have to draw it. It's kind of, like, the biggest problem with it, I'd say. It's not like Charisma, where it starts on the table.
Yeah, it's actually maybe I kind of wish they had maybe tacked on an extra XP or two and made this a permanent.
That would be appropriate.
Because then, I mean, we know what we're using this for. And if you're going to build a deck around it, why not just give it to us at the start so we don't have to frick around trying to draw this thing and draw the dogs and get it all to sort of all the pieces to fall in together at the right time so the deck actually works. Just, you know, make it cost 3 XP, it's does what Charisma does, but for creatures only, or make it cost 2 or whatever, you know, whatever something is an appropriate amount to make it a permanent.
Yeah, something in the same vein as Miskatonic University funding.
Yeah.
I think would be appropriate. Like, you take one copy of the permanent, it's maybe not unique, and there's your two ally slots that can only be used on your 4 sled dogs. Boom, there you go.
You know what this card reminds me of? The Return to the Circle Undone had Pendant of the Moon in it. That dealt with the tarot slots. This card feels exactly like that to me. It has that same issue you were talking about, Matt, right? Where you have to draw it, which sucks. And it's like, that was the whole issue with Pendant of the Moon, was that you know, you're relying on drawing it, which is harder. It's harder to do than to say, so... Yeah, it's a little unfortunate that, and it's like, it costs 2, and it will pay for itself, so it's like, if you can get it early, it is pretty good, but if you get it late, it's useless.
Yeah, and the other problem is it's unique, so the second copy, it's pretty much useless. I mean, it's got a willpower skill icon, but whoop-de-doo, you know, it's that's for a 1 XP card.
We've gone over plenty of 1 XP cards that have way more than one willpower icon.
Very true.
Yeah, I think this would have been better off as a permanent, really. I mean, again, it favors classes that have the draw to find it, right?
Well, you know,
we know which class that is, so
okay, we got to put a stop to this right now, or it's gonna affect.
I think you mean
all the rest of
every class has access to draw, because every class has access to force learning now.
That's
true. There you go.
That's true. Now, does the what's her name, the Dr. Ellie Horowitz hold this?
Yeah, it's a relic.
Yeah, it's a relic. So she can, if you got Dr. Ellie, she can have this relic in her hand, commanding the dogs. That's a nice. Yeah.
Also, it's an item. So Backpack Level 2, which, by the way, is an amazing card, very underrated, can find this.
Yeah, this one gets a blessed token from me. If you're building the dog deck, then You're probably going to buy at least a copy of this, if not two. If you're not playing the dog deck, then you'll never play this card.
Solid Bless token. I think that's further reinforces the fact that Sled Dog also gets a Bless, because this is just yet another card that you need to play in order to play the dogs effectively. So,
I mean, and we're saying dogs. There may be another creature deck out there, but the other creatures in this game, I don't know if they really necessarily lend themselves to building an entire deck around. So I'm not saying you can't do it. Go crazy. But those are not the creatures I will be using with this thing. The dogs are going to be my main target.
Guard dogs.
I was going to say, like, guard dogs, mysterious ravens, and stray cats are, like, your option. So, like, Yorick is an investigator that comes to mind if you're trying to use this and not use the dogs. Yorick can at least, like, kind of recur the things that he puts into his discard pile, right? He can, like, use Mysterious Raven over and over again to get clues on locations he couldn't otherwise get.
So it seems like one of those cards that's eventually going to work really well beyond the Sled Dog deck. But it's not. But we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And we know Maxine loves cats, so it's only a matter of time before we see the cat deck. We do have Miss Doyle, but those cats discard each other, so you can't have a ton of them on the table at the same time.
Black cat, there you go.
The black cat is not a creature.
What? Well, there you go. Oh, deck ruined. We got to taboo it. We got to taboo it.
Ally, avatar, and dreamlands trait. There's your
tribute.
Got to
taboo it. There you go. Get it done.
Yeah. Taboo to add creature trait to the card. Yep. That brings us to the final neutral card. It is Call for Backup. It is a one-cost event that costs 2 experience points. It has a wild skill icon, the favor and synergy trait. This is the neutral synergy card in the box, and so it has a whole raft of abilities on it. One at a time, in any order, if you control a rogue card, you may move to a connecting location. A guardian card, you may deal 1 damage to an enemy at your location. A seeker card, you may discover 1 clue at your location. A mystic card, heal 1 horror from any card. And survivor, you can heal 1 damage from any card. Now, I have not played the synergy deck yet. So my question about this card is, how many of these cards do you need to control before Call for Backup becomes useful to play? I feel like at least 2, if not 3, seems to be required.
I feel like this card's a trap. I
agree with Nate.
The issues with this card are, I think, twofold. One is that it costs experience, so it's kind of awkward to put in your deck, especially with all the other synergy cards. I think most of those also cost experience. So you're crippled there. And then the second issue is that all of these abilities, while they can be nice in certain situations, are all kind of middling on their own. So you're paying 2 XP, a card, and a resource for 2, possibly 3 kind of middling effects.
Well, I guess, and that's the reason I was asking, like, how many of these effects do you need to trigger before this card is worthwhile? Because personally, I mean, we already know how I feel about cards that heal. So the mystic and survivor effects on this card really don't interest me. So that leaves the rogue, so you get to move, deal the damage, and discover a clue. But I don't know how many circumstances you're going to be able to do all 3 of those. So that leaves you with, say, I'm a rogue guardian, I can move to a connecting location and deal a damage to an enemy. Now, Tesla's damage is good, the move is good, but is that enough? Are those 2 effects enough to make this card worthwhile? If I'm a seeker guardian, I discover a clue, I deal a damage and discover a clue. Again, 2, you know, Tesla's effects, both fairly good, but doesn't seem like quite enough on its own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got a problem of, Okay, so the Mystic and Survivor ones are pretty universal, especially since everyone's going to be taking in the thick of it all the time now, right, boys? Those two are pretty universal. The other three are kind of situational. Maybe the Seeker one is the least situational of the other three, but there's still situational effects. And then you run into the problem of, well, for 0 XP, I could use the slot on the effect I am going to want all the time, like on a move, use the slot on Elusive. Do I want to discover clues? Use the slot on working a hunch. Do I want to heal? Use the slot on any of the healing cards that, and but don't ask Man from Leng what they are because he doesn't know. It's like you can just pick a card, pick a function, maybe even two, pay 0 XP, and get what you want.
Yeah,
It's like
exactly.
half actions, and also that there's the problem that Arkham Horror, when it's go time in Arkham Horror, and you need to get things done because the game is pressuring you. It doesn't usually ask you to get multiple things done at once. It asks you to do one thing a lot, like deal 5 damage this turn, discover 4 clues and then move, heal like 3 horrors so you can survive the next round of treacheries. It doesn't tend to ask you to do a lot of different things at once, you know, when the chips are down.
Even in solo, like, yeah, moving and discovering a clue is kind of core to the solo like gameplay loop, but like there's just so many cards that cost 0 experience that do that, so just play those, you know. And this whole synergy archetype requires you to like build your deck in a specific way that I feel doesn't really have enough reward to it. And I think this card is kind of the prime example of that.
I agree. Synergy seems to suffer from, like, overall, it seems to suffer from they were designed for the ideal and not for the normal.
Yeah, one of the things I generally use to evaluate cards, and it's not very scientific, but it's how would I feel if I draw this card? Will I feel happy or will I feel disappointed? And this is one of those cards where I feel like more often than not, I will feel disappointed because I will not be able to get as much out of it as I want. And there are, like you say, level zero cards that do all of these things. And so I will save my 2 XP and play those.
And to answer your question more directly, Man from Lang, I think even if you triggered all 5 of these in your magical Christmas land of I have all 5 factions in play, it's still not very good. Like, okay, you heal some damage, you get a clue, you move, and you deal damage. Like, I'm pretty sure Eon Chart level 1 can do the same thing 3 times, so.
We'll get to that later.
But
I
we'll
told
get
you
to that.
guys, we gotta stop talking about seekers.
Well, it's like, I think every class has something like that, right? Like, Guardians, if you want
Yeah,
to move, just
probably.
play Safeguard. If you
Yeah,
know, if you're playing
you're probably
Seeker, you play
right.
Shortcut. If you're playing Survivor, you play Track Shoes. If you're playing Rogue, you have a ton of options. You
Elusive.
know, like,
Yeah.
yeah, Elusive, Scout Ahead, there's
Yeah.
tons of options, so.
It's true. It's true.
I think if the numbers were 2, if it was like deal 2 damage,
Oh, that'd be
then
great. Yeah.
we're in a different ballpark, but
Yeah. I wish it, you know what I wish it was? I wish this card was one at a time in any order, choose up to 3, and all the effects were doubled. Except for maybe the discover clue. Discovering one clue feels about right.
or
But if
you
it
know what I
was.
wish? You know what I wish actually, kind of on the same line, is if it was pick one and then do it for each faction you have. So it's like deal 1 damage for each faction you have. Discover 1 clue for each faction you have. Heal a horror for each faction you have. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the problem you run into is the players are going to complain, "Oh my God, that's so broken. When I have 5 synergy cards, when I have 5 assets on the table, it's going to be too broken." You know,
I
that's
feel
the
like
problem.
if you're able to set that
When,
up,
you
you
know,
know, first
you
off, that
deserve it.
requires.
You deserve a reward if you set that up, and that's the problem. When I think Arkham suffers a lot in the design stage is that I think there are a lot of cards where it's like designed for the ideal. You know, where it's like I played Voice of Ra and I drew 3 symbols. Yay! You know. Like, and it has to be nerfed down because of that. Yeah, and I think this suffers from that same problem.
Yeah, this one doesn't really inspire me to pay 2 XP, much less 4 XP. Maybe if it had another wild icon, but then
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
that might be something to give it a bit of a boost. But then, I mean, you're just paying 2 XP to get Unexpected Courage, which, as we've already found out, you can pay 1 XP and basically get Strength in Numbers, which is Unexpected Courage. So then you'd just be overpaying for this one. How would we rate this one?
I'm going to give this thing... Do I give it a tentacle? Yeah, I'm going to give it a tentacle. I don't like it.
Okay. Okay.
I think it's just, it's too mediocre. All the effects are pretty mediocre, and the fact that you're reliant on not only building your deck in such a way to be able to maximize its effects, but you're spending a lot of experience to build that deck, it just doesn't really feel worth it to me.
I've tried, I admit, I've tried, I've thought about this, I've tried over and over. As a person who's had no small experience with Lola Hayes, who this, you know, who like seems to like neutral events, I'm still going to give it a tentacle. It's just every time you look at this card and you're going to draw it and you're going to think, I wish I had something else. And you're going to think of what you want in your head. And then you're going to wish you paid 2 XP for that instead.
Yeah, I think I'll join you and give this a tentacle. Just thinking about the other synergy cards that are available for purchase, I feel like you're better served by picking those up, even if you just want to go for the synergy talents that are available. So you're getting a resource discount on cards and the ability to boost a test if necessary. I think there are those are a lot more interesting than this thing is, where it's just like, well, I'm going to get hopefully a bunch of sort of mediocre effects that will add up to something. And I just feel like it's not going to add up a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. So. I feel like if this card was fast, it'd be a lot better. If it was fast but still had these kind of middling effects, then it wouldn't feel so bad to pay 2 XP for, because it's kind of like essentially a shortcut with upside, or, you know, it's like a deal one damage with upside, or, you know, whatever effect you're looking for with upside at that point. It could be nice, but yeah, as it stands now, it's eh.
I wish it was 1 XP. The effects were better, but it capped at 3. So that way you avoid the problem of, I did the ultimate, you know, synergy deck and now I'm wrecking the game.
So that's going to do it for our look at the neutral cards in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. Let us know in the comments down below whether you agree or disagree. Let us know also, have you played the dog deck? What's your experience been? Any final thoughts?
I think it's
I want to build a Seeker dog deck.
Seeker dog deck. It's not a bad idea, actually. I think it actually works. I like how we got, in the thick of it aside, I like how we got 4 neutral cards all at once, which like in the cycle system we never would. So that means when you're starting off and this is like your first or second cycle, it's nice to have like a bunch of neutral cards there to fill up any deck you want for the most part. Maybe not call for backup because that one requires you to do certain things. But I think if your card pool is really small, like if you just stuck 4 Sled Dogs and 2 Heavy Furs in your deck, like you're not going to suffer too badly. And I kind of like that. Yeah. The neutral cards are not garbage. Except for call for backup. That's, you know.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of the neutral cards. I like cards that can be used in any class, and I always wish we would get more of them. I'm glad the ones in this set are pretty good. You know, I mean, Into the Thick of It just hands you a bunch of XP, but, you know, there's the dog deck in there. The rod helps that. The Heavy Furs is a pretty good utility body slot item, so I'm pretty happy with it overall.
We didn't get Knife this time. We didn't get Kukri. You know, we didn't get any of the other neutrals that whose names are totally escaping me because I never run. Yeah, we didn't get garbage neutrals. We got like neutrals that if you stuck them into a deck because, you know, you're trying to fill it out and get to 30, like, it's not going to be bad. You're not going to hurt.
And I will say, in defense of In the Thick of It, is that I do think it may encourage players to try solo out, because now they can play In the Thick of It and maybe have a better chance of succeeding when they might not have otherwise.
Yeah, I do admit I really like the idea for if you're trying solo, just give yourself some bonus XP at the beginning. You know, just, I mean, call it a handicap, call it a house rule, whatever you want. But I suggest trying it, because solo kind of has that problem of if you fail badly in the first scenario, you're gonna have a bad time. You're not gonna make it through the campaign, Nate.
I know, it's very true, and I think at least this sort of sets a precedent for that idea, which is nice. So I hope more people try solo out, because I personally do like lower player counts of this game.
That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your elder sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.